Dear 2016 self, what if your past defines you and that's not a bad thing? Let's say you have $35,000 in student loan debt. Most days you forget about it. You've graduated years ago and have since gone on to work a full-time job that pays the bills each month. Yet, every month on the same day, you get the email notification that $162 has been drafted from your bank account. It is the minimum monthly payment and barely making a dent. You see the debit and you respond the same way that you have every month for years. A flinch of stomach pain as the shame of this lingering debt flushes through you. You feel overwhelmed, defeated, and have given up on the idea that you might ever be financially sound enough to pay it back. Then one day, you open your mailbox to find an anonymous gift of a check written to the full amount of your student loan. A note is attached that reads, "Use this money to pay off your student loan." You are stunned, to say the least, overwhelmed with joy and hope for the future. As you jump up and down, scream crying, you don't have to ask yourself why you were so happy. In an instant, you can feel and remember all of the stress and sadness of this debt suddenly lifted from inside you. What you did not realize, however, was just how deeply this debt was affecting you. How passive, hopeless, and fearful you have become about your future. How often decisions like going out with friends, whether or not you will ever amount to anything, or if you should get married, were in some part drawing their conclusions from this debt. Simply, you never knew how deeply this thing was a part of you until you were free of it. I would imagine this is a fairly palatable scenario for most people. Most of us have financial debt in our life somewhere, so we can relate. But what if I pushed you towards something deeper, like perhaps your struggle with depression or anxiety, an addiction that you depend on to get through the day, the relationship that you are hiding out in, or the debilitating lies that you play on repeat in your head and are causing you to react in isolation, comparison, or self-promotion? Think on whatever scenario is in your life right now that you would like to change. The thing in your life that has exhausted you, owned you, and is keeping you from forming healthy, life-giving relationships with others. What is the one thing about which you think, my life is doing something here that I wish it were not doing? Got your thing in mind? Good. Now, as you hold that thing to the forefront of your thoughts, I want to tell you something. I wrote the check. That's right. I am the one who left the $35,000 in your mailbox. No, I don't want or need you to pay it back. The money is a gift. I could see how deeply this weight of debt was plaguing you. I could see that it was holding you back from really amazing opportunities and people. I love you. So, I want you to be free of it. That's it. No strings attached. I will never hold it over your head or mention it again. Also, you don't have to love me back. Heck, you don't even have to like me. I don't need that from you either. I personally know how great it feels to live without debt. And so, I simply want you to be free of it as I am. In fact, it brings me great joy to give you this money without needing anything in return from you. It's safe to say that despite my needing nothing from you, you will never forget me. At the very least, you will stay curious about me and why I did what I did. At the most, we will become dear friends and our selfie hashtags will be epic. To a person equipped with the money to pay off their debts, I'm no big deal. But to you, well, let's just say you've already scheduled our matching tattoos. There is no question that you are grateful for this gift. Something you thought would never change for you has changed. A weight you felt would never be lifted was not only lifted, but removed from your life altogether. All of the dreams and plans you would like to have had for your life suddenly have room to form into actual possibilities. And all of the resentful attitudes, words, and behaviors that you've been spewing onto others simply because they seem to be happy or content with their life, no longer feel stimulated. Why? You know, that's the real question. The question is not, are you grateful for my gift? The real question is, why are you grateful for my gift? Let's take the woman found in Luke chapter 7 for our answer and run home why I believe we are meant to be defined by our past. And behold, a woman of the city who was a sinner, when she learned that he was reclining at a table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of ointment. And standing behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head and kissed his feet and anointed them with the ointment. Therefore, I tell you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But he who is forgiven little loves little. Now, when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would have known who and what sort of woman this is who is touching him, for she is a sinner. And Jesus, answering, said to him, Simon, I have something to say to you. And he answered, say it, teacher. A certain moneylender had two debtors. One owed 500 denarii and the other 50. When they could not pay, he canceled the debt of both. Now, which of them will love him more? Simon answered, the one, I suppose, for whom he canceled the larger debt. And he said to him, you have judged rightly. Then turning toward the woman, he said to Simon, do you see this woman? I entered your house. You gave me no water for my feet, but she has wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but from the time I came in, she has not ceased to kiss my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil, but she has anointed my feet with ointment. Therefore, I tell you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But he who is forgiven little loves little. And he said to her, your sins are forgiven. Then those who were at the table with him began to say among themselves, who is this who even forgives sins? And he said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. This Bible story is often taught in the context of quantity. I get it. I have personally studied it this way, the wrong way, for most of my life. It is easy to go to the numbers first simply because Jesus does. I used an example like this one on the front end of this blog, one involving money. Jesus most often told stories that met people where they were in their thinking, which is shallow. In this setting, Jesus was interacting with people who loved money, rules, numbers, quantifiable things. So he starts there, where they are. But to be set free by the truth of Jesus, we must look past the story itself and into the reason for the story. If we peel back one more layer to this story, we notice that Jesus never addresses the woman's specific sins by name, but instead sums up her past behaviors quite simply. Her sins are many. If we peel back yet another layer, we see that this woman is also not counting off her list of sins. She doesn't even try. She knows full well that her sins are many. This woman knew what the religious leaders around her did not, that there was no way to adequately name or number all of our past sin. She knew what so many of us struggle to remember. Sin is a posture of the heart, not a particle of matter. Sin is a part of us because we are human. We are born with a desire for sin that we never outgrow. We will never be capable of loving like Jesus 100% of the time. It is quite impossible, in fact, for us to monitor every time we are thinking or responding from an impure motive. For most of us, The quest to be loved in a way that allows us to maintain control at all times is such a natural way of life that we barely realize when or how it's happening. This is sin in a nutshell. Anytime our mind disbelieves God loves us. Sin is expressed into quantifiable pieces through the way we communicate that belief. Sin is mostly communicated through our nonverbal responses, which are 70 to 80% of our communication, and also through our verbal responses, our actual words. It is impossible for humans to keep an account of all the times, big and small, that we desire to be God in our heart and then express it through our communications. Therefore, Jesus covers the whole of it. All of the sin that we are aware of and unaware of. All of the sin that reaches our consciousness and all that floats around in our subconsciousness. We experience joy in our life only to the degree that we recognize our inability to account for all of our sins, leaving us only to summarize them into, yep, they are many. To the degree that we are aware of our many sins is the degree to which we believe God is able to save us from them. This woman wept from her overwhelming awareness that she was indeed a sinner, not because she had a calculated list of sins drafted in her mind. This woman could not stop kissing the feet of Jesus simply because she was free to do so. In fact, the joy and the gratitude she felt for the debt that had now been paid left her no other response but to pour out from the overflow of her being the wealth of love that was now within her heart. With each kiss, she was not counting off a sin in her head, but instead celebrating the fact that despite her sin, past, present, and future, she was loved by God. We respond to God to the degree we believe He is capable of changing things. And this is what Jesus was commending. Notice it was her faith that saved her, not what she did or did not do. She believed that Jesus was fully able to cancel the whole of her debt, not just a couple $100 here and there, but the entire $35K. She believed this because she knew the details of her sin better than anyone in the room. She knew the fear that gripped her as a child, the insecurity and shame she struggled with as a teenager. She had lived for herself the torment and despair of loss, condemnation, self-hate. She alone chose to seek comfort and control in all the wrong places, substance, sex, and striving. The poverty in her life was personal to her. She was very much aware of just how heavy the weight of trying to play God had become. No, she had not grown up in church or with parents who wanted her. She had no higher education or friends in her life who loved her enough to hope more for her. She just knew that she wanted things to be different. She never had the luxury of planning or dreaming over her future. There was no therapist helping her process through her feelings. All she had was the word of a man who said he was God. And she listened. She listened to him from her shadows. And when she did, her soul leapt with peace. As he spoke, his words felt easy and light, like water to the dry and barren soul inside her. She believed him. And as he continued to speak, she felt as though she was born for this moment. Her spirit awoke to the truth that Jesus is God, and God as flesh means the full pardon of her sin. She ran as fast as she could to her home, grabbing the most expensive treasured item that she owned, her perfume. Used on many nights before to tempt men into paying her for sex, she would now use it to symbolize the giving of all that she is to the one who is all. As the perfume poured out, so did her life. As she believed in him as God, she no longer believed the lie that she need be one. There before her, on the feet of Jesus, her past was felt, remembered, and owned in the robust aroma now filling the room. She had no desire to forget, no need to write her own ending or look away from the beginning. For without each gut-wrenching moment from her past, she would not feel the full weight of the glory of this moment. The moment when Paid in Full was written on her life. Deuteronomy 4:9. Only take care and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things that your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. Job 8:8. For inquire, please, of bygone ages, and consider what the fathers have searched out. Psalm 78:6-7. That the next generation might know them, the children yet unborn, and arise and tell them to their children, so that they should set their hope in God and not forget the works of God. James 1:23-25. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man who looks intently at his natural face in a mirror. For he looks at himself and goes away, and at once forgets what he was like. But the one who looks into the perfect law, the law of liberty, and perseveres, being no hearer who forgets, but a doer who acts, he will be blessed in his doing. Isaiah 46:9-10. Remember the former things of old, for I am God, and there is no other. I am God, and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times things not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will accomplish all my purpose. The above five verses are plucked from over 240 biblical commands to remember. For clarity, the commands that seem to contradict the remembering of our past, like, but one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and straining forward to what lies ahead, Philippians 1, and for you will forget the shame of your youth and the reproach of your widowhood you will remember no more, Isaiah 54:4. These are by no means a contradiction, but instead, I argue they are for the truth. To look back is to step forward. To remember the grace that has been lavished on us, over us, and for us in His faithfulness is to rest confidently in the fact that everything that has happened has been on purpose. To walk forward in that freedom at the end of it means we really can't screw up our life. If God is the author of our entire life, then He fully intends for us to own and know every chapter. Each scene, no matter how disgusting or delightful, is written by Him and for Him. He fully intends for us to understand and own just how desperate we are for Him based on our story. Paul reminisced his former sins often and in detail, but not in a way that caused him to doubt the hope of his future. Isaiah prophesied often of God's command for his people to remember the many times he had rescued them, but not in a way that produced shame or disapproval. To be defined by our past is only to describe the nature of God's faithfulness. To point to the events and people who have shaped our life is simply to point to who God is and how He redeems us. I cringe whenever I hear a song or comment or a Facebook post like the following. Quote, my past does not define me, end quote. Quote, I am not the sum total of my mistakes, end quote. Quote, I can write my own ending. For the record, my mind has changed on this since writing Named by God. I still love that book and that piece of my redemption story, but I was wrong to think my mistakes, failures, and sin were not fully a part of who I am and who I am becoming. Heck, maybe I'm wrong about this too. But man, I just feel so stinking free here that it is so hard to look back. You see, despite how much we try to forget it, move on from it, or write our own ending, whatever the heck that means, that 35K is a part of us. As a debt that we owe, it is a hard, shameful part of our story that keeps us from abundant life. But as a debt that has been paid in full, it is a brilliant reminder of God's nature, that He is faithful to forgive us always simply because it's who He is, with no bearing on who we are. The years that you spent owing are no less a part of you because the debt has been paid, but instead, a season that has shaped you and is forever woven into you as a mark of your mortality that is moving toward immortality. If there is anyone who has some seriously nasty pieces of her story that she would rather not be defined by, it is absolutely me. But I cannot rewrite or redefine my past, nor do I want to. Being defined by my past means that I trust God with my story thus far and to be continued. I believe that every line of my story has been intentionally threaded into me as an explanation for the unique and personal plan God has predetermined for me. My sins are many. The choices I made that put me into $35,000 worth of debt are regrets for sure, but also choices that have shaped me, allowed me to be healed by God, and grown in me the desire to joyfully pour out all that I am for the love of others. If you are struggling to own, remember, share, or allow your past to define you, here are a few considerations that have loved me well. Number one, understand that despite where you stand on this, your past is alive and well to your brain. Your brain actually has no notion of the future. It only functions in the present based on past experiences. Your brain is literally defined by your past in every way. It only responds to people and circumstance the way it has time and time again. Until, however, you slow down long enough to the state of self-awareness. Self-awareness is the breathable space that allows us to process instead of react. It is a space that asks, why did I just do that? Why did I just say that? Why do I believe this about myself, God, or another? Self-awareness is the key to tracing our path of pain in order for God to show us His new thing. It is the exact spot we see played out for us through our worshipful, weeping woman of Luke 7. Number two, once our past pain is released into words, the memory changes from shame into strength. The memory is still a part of us. In fact, our brain has stored all of our memories into millions of tiny file drawers in our brain. The more self-aware that we are, the more drawers we are able to access. As we open the file of a specific memory, the neuron police give it only one option if it wants to change from a bad memory into a good memory, the oral audible translation into words. That's right, all you introverts. Us chatty Cathys finally have a reason to exist. For it is only through the verbal expression of our memories that our brain can change them from shame into strength. Number three, we only become aware of our need for God when we allow our past to have a purpose to our future. Without our past defining us, our entire future is in vain. If God is a loving, intentional creator, then He has been building our callings and giftings into us from our mother's womb. None of us start a movie or book without the understanding that there will be an ending. Even as we sit through the opening credits or begrudgingly read the author's introduction, we know that every scene from this moment forward is building toward a grand resolution. Why do we think so differently about our own life story? If God is building humanity toward His epic finale, the glorification of believers and the renewal of the earth, then every season of our life is on purpose and for purpose. Number four, reframing our story as one huge sin that has been forgiven by one huge Savior sets us free to own and share our story. When our past is a part of our present, we no longer need to be embarrassed or ashamed of things we have done, not done, or have been done to us. Instead, all of our weaknesses and failures are an open book to anyone, because God is made more glorious in all of it. And number five, bringing our past to light gives us courage for our future. Living in the most honest version of ourselves is a process. We are not naturally a vulnerable, honest people. But over the course of our life, God teaches us that to rest in His faithfulness is to desire His glory more than any grudge we are hanging on to and more than any insecurity we are prone to. As we grow up, life becomes less about the doing and more about the abiding. Like our woman who lost herself in the aroma of grace and received courage to stay at the feet of Jesus, despite the judgment and condemnation that surrounded her. This 2016, I am going to stay curious about my past and allow it to teach me about my future. I refuse to water it down or hide out in the shiny pieces while casting the broken pieces aside. I have no desire to not be defined by my past and haven't a clue how to write an ending to my life that would begin to come close to the immeasurably more that points only to God's kingdom. I can, however, remember how great it felt when the torment of that debt was totally forgiven without need of payback. I will think about the person who wrote that check every single day for the rest of my life. And each time I do, I will feel so overwhelmed with gratitude for what has been done for me that I can't help but look for ways to give that same freedom to others.